Hey, what's up, guys? It's Jordan with the Laundromat Resource Podcast. This is show 128, and I am pumped that you're here today because today we're going to dig a little deeper into SBA loans with a good buddy of mine, Bo Eckstein, and we're going to go into a lot of detail. If this is something that you're interested in, drop me a line, jordan@laundromatresource.com, and let me know that, and I can set up a live Q&A with Bo also, who knows his stuff. He loves this. He helps out with laundromat owners and people who are trying to buy laundromats to help them qualify for the SBA loan. So if you're interested in that, drop me a quick line and just say, hey, do an SBA Q&A. Look at that rhyming right now. This is great. Anyways, super exciting episode. A lot of so good information, especially if you're looking for financing for a laundromat acquisition. Yeah. Okay. So, but before we jump into that, a couple quick things. Number one, make sure you're checking laundromatresource.com/events regularly and or your emails that we send out because there's a lot going on. I know this week we have three different live Q&As. I'm doing one with Sue Kant from Turns. We have a women's meetup and live Q&A also just for the women in the industry. Way to go, Laura Burkowski, who you can book a call with at laundromatresource.com/coaching, by the way. And also I'm doing a live Q&A on commercial drop off and pickup and delivery with David Lang this week. Make sure if you haven't yet, and you're interested in growing or starting a pickup and delivery or a drop-off wash-dry fold business, and you want to learn how to get commercial and corporate clients, check out laundromatresource.com/accelerator. We've got that accelerator program. We only have a couple spots left, but we do have a couple spots left, so that's good news. So check that out over there. And listen, the other event that's coming up in less than a month now from when this is coming out is our live meetup that we're doing, first ever Laundromat Resource live meetup. And that's going to be in the Southern California area. We're going to be in LA there. So if you are interested in coming to that live meetup, if you're in Southern California or you just want to come to Southern California for it, it's a 2-hour meetup. We're getting together. It's just time for our industry to kind of get together without having to pay thousands of dollars to do it, right? So we're doing that in October. Check out laundromatresource.com/events, or there'll be a direct link to that event in the show notes or if you're on YouTube down below. And if you're not in Southern California, take heart, because the goal is to have these all over the country. And listen, in order to make that happen, we've got to come together as a community here, right? I can't be at every single one every single time. So my goal is to partner with laundromat owners in different areas to host these meetups. And, you know, we provide all the support, we provide all the help to get things going, to make sure everything's organized. We give you some ideas of what to do and how to do it. If you need people to kind of help you put together an agenda and stuff, we can do that. If you need guests and stuff, we can help you coordinate that. But what we want to do is partner with you to help launch these meetups all over the country. That's the goal. That is the aim. Because I've been saying it since the beginning, we're all better when we're working together and when we're getting together and we're helping each other out. We're talking about best practices. We're talking about how to elevate everything, right? Our industry, yes. Our businesses, yes. Ourselves personally, yes. All of that stuff happens when we get together. So I'm super excited about it. Hopefully you're super excited about it. If you're interested in co-hosting with me in your neck of the woods, wherever that might be, drop me a line, Jordan, J-O-R-D-A-N, @laundromatresource.com. And let me know and we'll jump on a call and see if we can make that happen. All right. Without further ado, let's jump into it with my good buddy, Bo Eckstein. Bo, thank you for coming on the show, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
It is my pleasure. We've known each other for a little bit now here, and so it's been cool. We've been talking about you coming on the show for a little while and talking lending and SBA loans and all that. So I'm super excited that we're finally making it happen. I appreciate it. Why don't you give us a little bit of a background on who you are?
Sure. So I've been in real estate and lending for 25 years. So pretty much I didn't go to college. I didn't know what I wanted to do with myself other than I either wanted to be a farmer, a police officer, or get into real estate. And I ended up getting into real estate. And I started as a residential mortgage broker. And then, you know, I wanted to be big time. I started buying all these properties. 2007 rolled around. I realized that prices don't always appreciate. That was a kind of a reality check in my 20s. Then I got into hard money lending. And then about 10, 12 years ago, I started getting into commercial lending. So, and then over the last 5 or 6 years, got into SBA lending. Flipped houses, owned rental properties, owned a couple small businesses. Always trying to learn. And that's what I really love about SBA lending. It's like you can be really creative on structuring deals. And happy to be here to kind of share some knowledge that I have.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think you're big time. So you're big time in my book. That's for sure. So listen, you've made it. I mean, one of the biggest questions, the biggest questions I have are always around money, right? And lending and acquisition. It's really the barrier to entry in laundromats, right? Is that they can, you know, require a lot of capital upfront and a lot of capital to operate sometimes. So, you know, people are always trying to figure out how can I get my foot in the door? And we were chatting at a mastermind meeting we were at, and I was like, listen, man, you got to come talk about this stuff with my audience, because this is what people want to know. This is what people want to hear. So here we are. Let's talk lending and laundromat lending specifically. What are some of the, you know, obviously loan products are changing and stuff like that, but what are some of the options in terms of financing? Let's start broad and then we'll just kind of narrow it down and get into the SBA from there.
Yeah, I think it also, you know, it all stems with, are you buying just the business? Or are you buying the real estate as well? Are you starting the business from scratch? Those are big variables that we'd have to figure out. But I first want to say, a lot of times newer, you know, investors and operators in different businesses in real estate, we see the common things that they do. They start leveraging their personal credit, and then all of a sudden their utilization is high and their credit scores drop. I always tell people, let's start with the basics, because I've made a lot of mistakes. And so what you really want to do is you want to really focus on keeping your credit and your utilization as strong as possible. By doing that, what I would recommend is setting up a qualified funding entity, and that gets credit, and that credit doesn't show on your personal credit report. So a lot of people, I get this call at least once a week. Hey, Bo, I'm trying to refinance or whatever. It could be a real estate deal. How's your credit look? Well, you know, it's normally 730, but it's at like 580 right now because I maxed all my credit cards out trying to get the business started. That's the worst thing you can do, because that's going to trap you. You got to play the credit game and do that from the start. And now, like, because I learned the hard way, I did that and my scores went from 720 down to 580 when I was rehabbing a house years back. And I got stuck. I didn't know it was going to be, basically the cost of construction was $70,000 more than I thought. So I put on a couple credit cards. So now, you know, fast forward to today, I keep up my credit score at around 800, keep my utilization very low. But I now have multiple business entities with lots of available credit, like a couple hundred thousand. So I think that mindset getting started is what we have to start with the end in mind. So if there's any tough times or we're buying stuff, we have to buy new, you know, machines for the laundromat, we can use that worst case scenario. Obviously, there's equipment financing. There's a lot of stuff. But I think really kind of starting with a good base is the key. And then as far as, you know, financing. So
can we pause?
I have.
Quick? I mean,
sure.
I think that's huge. And that's something that's not talked about a lot. Right. And you mentioned qualified funding agency. Can you talk about what is that? How do we get started in that process of utilizing, like, or even starting like business credit? Can you just kind of break that down a little bit?
Sure. And I'm not an expert in business credit. I'm just taking what I've learned from other mentors in the space, but we call it a qualified funding entity.
Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. And so this entity is going to be the entity that we kind of put on the shelf and we position it so it's in a certain way. So that is the entity that's going to like really get the most amount of credit lines and credit cards. And when you're selecting the business type, that's usually going to be some kind of management company. There's NAICS codes. Those are like how businesses are identified. It wants to be some kind of management company or something like that, consulting. It doesn't want to be a, you know, real estate company or something that is risky. And so this qualified funding entity is going to eventually build credit. And oftentimes people get it wrong. They tell you you can go out and you can build actual business credit, which is true. You can get gas cards and stuff that they don't do. They don't pull your credit. You don't personally guarantee it. But that's like the slow way. Usually what happens is when you set up the entity the right way, you're going to go to Wells Fargo or a bank. And when you go in there, when you open that checking account, if you're set up correctly, they're going to give you $10, $20, $30, $40, $50,000 from day one. And so there's certain banks that are more liberal. So I think, there's like Umpqua Bank and, Citizens Banks. Those banks will do like an app only up to $100,000. So knowing how to kind of play the game. But the qualified funding entity is really the entity that is going to use its credit lines, and it's going to invest and make loans to your other business entities, and then you repay it back. So that's what the purpose of that funding entity will do. So really what happens is when you apply for credit or when you open an account and it triggers, there's algorithms and they approve it like instantly, the credit companies. And then they determine how much loan amount is. So also there's things on your personal credit you want to look for. Like if you have name variations, you want to fix all that. Like, cause my legal name isn't Bo. Bo's my middle name. So I might have Bo Eckstein, but my legal name is Stephen Bo Eckstein. So you want to get those variances correct. You want to get your address correct. You don't want to have 50 addresses. You don't want to have 50 employers on your credit report. So your personal credit profile is the most important thing, making sure all those things are on point. But you see, like starting with the end in mind, because a lot of business owners, what are they doing? They're leveraging to the hilt, right? That's what they try to do. I'm working with one gentleman right now, and he's buying a franchise. And he's like, he only has $30,000 to his name. We're going to get him SBA financing. And like he's like completely trying to leverage. And he needs to have a backup plan, because what happens when you go in business, there's always unexpected costs. So you always want to have this plan first. And then we go into like, now we can go into like, okay, now we're looking at a laundromat to purchase and it's an existing business. So if you're looking to get the highest leverage possible, we're going to utilize SBA financing. You're going to if there's no real estate, you're going to definitely utilize the SBA 7A or the SBA Express, which they're pretty much the same. There's some differences depending on the total loan amount. But on SBA loan, you can finance up to 90% of the purchase price. You can build in working capital. You can build in employee salary for the first few months. You can build in money for improvements and for more machines, assuming that the cash flow will debt service the new debt, right? So it's got a cash flow. However, that's not always the case. Sometimes I'm sure, Jordan, that you buy a mismanaged laundromat facility and that their tax returns are not great. They run losses. They run personal expenses. That's okay, because we can use 3 years of projections, and we can use that. So SBA 7A loans could be projection-based, right? So even if the cash flow is not there, we can still sometimes make deals. We can still, oftentimes, these mom-and-pop laundromats, and I'm not an expert like Jordan. I'm actually got to take his courses so I can learn how to buy laundromats. But from a lending standpoint, there's always, people always run their personal expenses through their business, and they do that because they pay less taxes. Well, the problem is when they go to sell, it's very hard to finance. So oftentimes you're going to see some seller financing, which is always the best option. If you can get the seller to finance the deal, is usually always the best option. But there's ways to do it. We talked about business plans, Jordan, and business plans are very important. I know that's, everybody's worried about the business plan, but really, it doesn't have to be elaborate. You're going to do 3 years of projections. We have an Excel template that we give our borrowers. They're going to break it down month to month for year one, and then they do year two and three. That's usually what the SBA banks want. We're going to do a business plan. That doesn't have to be a 20-page business plan. It's just like, hey, we're taking over this business. This is what we're going to implement. They're doing coins, and we're going to implement new machines, but we're going to phase it out. This is our plan. That's all you need. A resume. My name is Bo. This is my background. although I don't have laundromat experience, I've been a self-employed broker. I have business savvy. I have all this, like, that's what your resume says. So even if you don't have laundromat experience, doesn't mean you're not going to get the loan. So hopefully that was a good little kind of overview of just the initial stuff. Now let's dive into whatever you want to, questions you might ask, and I can elaborate on.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that that's awesome because that is one of the big concerns. I mean, going back to, being able to utilize projections to qualify, you know, one of the biggest concerns is, you know, I sort of half joke a lot, like laundromat owners are either really, really bad at keeping the books. I mean, I've gotten P&Ls on napkins, literally handwritten on napkins, or we're really good at keeping the books and maybe we have more than one book, right? Or, you know what I mean? And so, you know, when those books are messy, you know, obviously banks are very risk averse and all that. So, you know, trying to qualify, you know, for loans for laundromats can be tricky. So I like to hear that you can use some projections sometimes to qualify these existing laundromat purchases. okay. So, you know, like you said, a lot of business owners like to utilize as much leverage as possible. And are, you know, looking to have as little skin in the game as possible, or they just don't have, like you said, you know, the guy you're working with who's got 30K, who's trying to, you know, nab a franchise. First of all, is that doable with 30K?
Yeah, but I mean, like a made pro franchise it's about 130,000 with working capital all in. So if you have 10% or 15% equity injection, yeah, you can do it. So look, there's something for everybody, and maybe you can't go out and buy a $2 million laundromat on your first acquisition, but there's stepping stones. Maybe you're doing vending. Maybe you're, I mean, you got to just build, really. You got to build. And so I remember when I was living in the Bay Area, and I worked out at 24 Hour Fitness, and I would see this firefighter in there, and I knew, we started talking, and I didn't realize he owned all these laundromats, and I'm like, well, I don't even realize why you're still a firefighter, but he was just crushing it. He owned a bunch of laundromats throughout the Bay Area. And it's just like, that's when it was really kicked into me. I was like, wow, that's, you know, there's a reason why so many people want to buy these laundromats and car washes. And I see it firsthand. I see the opportunities, you know, out there with these businesses. So, you know, I have a laundromat I'm working on right now for a gentleman. And So what I do in the SBA equation, I should probably explain that. I'm a broker. I'm a consultant. So I work with banks, credit unions, and non-bank SBA lenders. Yes, there's non-bank SBA lenders. We typically work with PLP lenders, meaning that they're the direct lenders they underwrite in-house. I do 7As. I do 504. I do kind of alternative finance. I do a little bit of equipment financing. I do some real estate stuff too. It's kind of my lending business. But what I do is really I help structure and package the deal and then take it to the right bank. I act as the quarterback in the beginning. And then once we get a term sheet, the processor from the bank takes over and I stay in the deal, but I'm kind of in the background. The best part, typically on all SBA loans, I don't even charge a fee because I get paid a referral fee from the bank. So it's a free service, value add. So I had a laundromat come to me a couple months back, and he was buying the real estate and the business, and the lady was going to carry the business portion of it, not the real estate. And so he wanted to do it. So we finally figured out how to structure it, which would be SBA eligible. And then the first bank just that I brought it to, sometimes I have to bring it to two banks because, you know, stuff happens. There's no surefire way. Getting an SBA loan sometimes it takes a lot of tenacity, but at the end of the day, where you can leverage almost 100% financing SBA. That's why we do it. Sometimes we have to take punches to get through to the finish line. But anyways, with that business, we took it to the first bank, and they couldn't get the DSCR correct. They're like, hey, there's too many write offs. But really what it takes, you got to dive in. So one, if you're looking to buy, you have to build a relationship with the seller, even if there's a broker involved, because we're going to have to get in sometimes. We're going to go, hey, what about, why are you running a car your car payment through this. Like when I, it's not really, we're not delivering anything. We don't need a car for this business. So you're going to see there's always going to be add backs. And these coin operated laundry facilities, let's face it, it's like tips when you're a waiter. You're not claiming all of it. We know that. So we just got to get in there. And then cost of goods sold on this particular deal, there was a huge amount of the COGS was not realistic. And so she was building something in there to write off. So we got to the end of the day, we found the bank and we got on the phone and we worked through it and we got a term sheet. Now we're buying the real estate. So what do you have to do? SBA guidelines are going to want a phase one. That's an environmental. And unfortunately, the neighbor had a contamination on their property. So we went through all this. We ended up having to do a phase two. And now we just got clear that everything is good. So now we're going to the closing on it. So it does take time. It takes resilience sometimes. So I'm not going to like sugarcoat this and tell you it's super easy. Now, they're starting to streamline the smaller loans under $500,000. The Express, they're a little bit more streamlined. But there's always going to be hiccups and it's just working through. And that's why I'm here, is because I can help people navigate this. And if you go to one bank, they could decline it, or they could say, hey, we'll do this deal with 20% equity injection. You could take it to a different bank and they say, okay, we'll do this at 10% equity injection. It's all over the gamut, because at the end of the day, the banks still overlay the deal and they still have to use, we call it prudent lending. So we just find the most aggressive lenders with the best terms, is kind of how I try to navigate to get the deal done.
Yeah. And actually what I love about utilizing the services of like a loan broker as opposed to going direct is that you do have that opportunity to sort of advocate for the deal and also can consult on that deal, right? In that process. And so it's almost like having a teammate on your team as you're going through this process. And you know, like you said, it can be a little painful, and actually it can be a little painful for the seller sometimes too, going through that process, because they a lot of times need to provide a lot of documentation and, you know, there's a lot of back and forth that can go on. Real quick, I want to just so everybody's kind of on the same page, a couple of things that you mentioned, I just want to get clarity on, just so we're on the, you know, everybody's up to speed. So you mentioned DSCR, which is debt service coverage ratio. Can you briefly describe what that is?
Yeah, so basically they want to make sure that the cash flow in place can more than pay for the new debt that's going to be on there, right? So they want to make sure it can pay for it by 115%. 115% is very low. Really, you want to look for businesses that are, the DSCRs are much better than that, but you can go as low as that with SBA financing. Now, I will add, sometimes you're gonna find an old dilapidated laundromat that is a value add, right? There's some people buy turnkey. Some people probably do value add because that's how you're gonna get in when you're starting, and then you can make more money on the upside. So you can have in your business plan and your projections, you can say, hey, I'm changing out 20 machines, and that's gonna reflect in our new projections because they're better machines. You're gonna charge more per load, yada, yada, yada. So you can do projection based. And so we just want to show why we're going to make more money, because part of our total project cost is we're buying these 20 new machines and they're going to do X amount and the revenue for this is X and they're not coin operated anymore. You know, pay with a card or, you know, so that's building the story. So you can do deals that don't debt service today is my point. And that's how we would do them.
Yeah. Okay. And then real quick, you mentioned COGS, cost of goods sold. Can you describe or define, I guess, what COGS, cost of goods sold, is?
Yeah. So anything like on a laundry facility, right? Like if you're, it could be, you know, cleaning supplies that you're using to clean the facility. It could be, you know, people are putting in their, you know, if they have staff, their clothing for their staff, they could be anything that you lump in cost of goods sold. It could be, I mean, most of the time you're thinking it's going to be laundry detergent and things like that. But the problem is that cost of goods sold ends up being a lot of personal items, usually with these mom and pop owned things. So like, you know, there could be expenses that are a new computer that they're not really using for the business, but they're running it through the business. You see what I'm saying? So that's where the problems arise. So any one-time expense, when we're looking at this, any one-time expense or any capital improvement, right, we can add that back into the cash flow. So that's the importance of having the relationship with the seller, is to really kind of get in and understand the financials. Because on these tougher deals that you know you're going to make a lot of money on when you take over operations, they're usually the hardest ones to kind of get SBA financing for, because you got to weed through all this stuff that's not been managed correctly.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate you taking the time, just so we're all on the same page. Okay. You mentioned it can be a little painful to go through this process a little bit. Can we just talk about the process? Like, what kind of pain are we walking into here? What's the, you know, if I'm wanting to go and buy my first laundromat, what's the process I go through to get an SBA loan?
Sure. So I would say the initial part isn't that painful at all. From you, we're going to get 3 years of tax returns. If you have any other businesses, we're going to get business tax returns for those other entities. If you have any other businesses, you're going to have put together a debt schedule. But if you're just a W-2 employee, you're just 3 years of tax returns, Form 413, which is a personal financial statement, Form 1919, which is kind of like a loan application, an SBA loan application, and a resume, and then business plan. And then from the seller, we need 3 years of tax returns and a year to date. That's what we need initially. That's usually enough to get a term sheet. Once we get the term sheet and you sign the term sheet, then typically the bank processor takes over. And then there's going to be other, you know, obviously we're going to have to do inventory. You're going to have to make lists of what inventory is there, the equipment, serial numbers on the equipment, right? We're going to have, if there's any accounts receivable, things like that, we have to get, there's forms for all of that. But once we get the term sheet, you sign it, it goes to the processor. Processor then has a checklist. You're working with a processor at the bank or the credit union. You're going through that. They're doing, in the back end, they're doing like, pulling tax transcripts and things from the IRS. Depends if there's real estate, we're going to do an appraisal. We're going to do a phase one. If there's no real estate, we're not going to do that. You're going to have to get a copy of the lease. The SBA, the bank usually has a form they want the landlord to sign, things like that. But it's just a back and forth, and it's a process. Anytime you get a commercial or business type of loan, unless it's a no-doc loan, it's a process. These things take a while to do. If it's a small SBA Express, sometimes you can close these a little bit quicker than the full 7A type of loans. So they have small 7A loans, SBA 7A loans, they have express loans, and then they have regular 7A loans. So you can have a total aggregate of $5 million of SBA financing. Now, we can talk about this later, but some people build their own facilities or buy their buildings, and they use another product called the SBA 504. And if you know about the SBA 504, you can do it's a first and second. So you can do like much larger deals. And so only the second part is the SBA guaranteed piece. So I can buy a $12 billion facility if I wanted to with an SBA loan. Senior debt is 50% of the total project cost, and the SBA piece is 40%. You get 90% financing potentially, but that's the 504. So going back to the process, once all the processing documents are in, you get a loan commitment at that time. And then once the loan commitment is in, you get assigned a closer at the bank. And the closer then has more paperwork back and forth. And, you know, for example, right before I got on this call, I'm financing an acquisition of a painting company, no real estate involved. And the bank pulled transcripts from the seller's tax returns to make sure they were filed and they're legitimate, and their 2020 wasn't filed. So they had to go back and like, why wasn't this filed? And like, you know, somehow it didn't get filed. And so it was a simple fix, but those are the kind of things that happen in between accounts receivable. There's documents for those kind of things that you have to get complete. But I mean, it's really not that hard. It's just a longer process with these larger deals. If it's a $200,000 or $300,000 deal, those are a little bit easier. You can do them under the express. There's a lot of non-bank SBA lenders that do the express loans, and they're more kind of quicker, where you're going to get a faster response and things move a little bit quicker. But yeah, you, if there's no real estate involved, figure around 60 days to close. If there's real estate involved, it's going to be, it could be 4 or 5 months. You just never know, depending on the whole process and just how fast the seller gets you the documents you need, how fast the bank can move. Not all banks are, some banks are faster than others. So it just really depends on the deal itself. But that's where communication is really critical. It's just that, you know, the seller wants to make sure the deal is going to go through. The buyer's nervous. The banker's trying to like be the middleman, and they're dealing with the underwriter. So it's just a process. But what I really love about this, if you can find the right deal, you get 90% of total project costs, which includes working capital, all that stuff. It's not just the purchase price. All right. And then the other beautiful thing is you can get the seller to carry back 5% on full standby. If they carry back 5% on full standby, that's like leaving 5% of their equity in the deal. They can't make payments, or maybe it's interest-only payments for the first 2 years. It used to have to be for the full life of the loan. Now it only has to be for 2 years. So now I only have to come in with 5%. So let's just say it's $1 million facility. It's a building that you're buying and the business. And it's $1 million, or it's $900,000, but with total project costs, it's $1 million. 900,000 comes from the bank, 5% on standby from the seller. So that's all I need to come in with is 50 grand. Well, you know what? The beauty of it is like, hey, you know, I just bought a short-term rental. I'm kind of broke right now, but this is a great deal. But I know Jordan has dry powder. Hey, Jordan, you're experiencing this. You're my mentor in laundromat facilities. I'll give you 15% if you come in with the 50 grand or 10% of the deal. You don't have to go on the loan. You know, you're providing equity. It can't be a loan, but if you become, you know, you own 15% of this entity, you can do that. So I was just able to close with zero out of pocket. You can do that all day long. Now, granted, I have to have the borrowing characteristics. And what does that mean? I need like a 660 minimum credit score. If I have any derogatories, they need to be explained with letter explanation. I have to be a U.S. citizen or a permanent resident alien. I can't be on an E2 visa here in the States. We have other programs for that, but it's not going to work for SBA. There's certain rules if you have any felonies in your past. Not to say you can't get if you're on probation, things like that. There's certain rules there. BKs, you can have BKs in the past, but it's got to be what, you know, usually like 7 years or more. But if you have good credit, and then the other thing too is they're going to look at global cash flow. So we don't look at DTI like when you buy a house. They look at global cash flow. So as long as you don't have a lot of revolving debts, you know, like, oh, I have this Range Rover, I'm making a $1,500 a month payment. I have a Mercedes. If you're not over leveraged, then you should be fine typically. But they will look at global cash flow. So those are the considerations.
There. What about, you mentioned bankruptcies. What about business bankruptcies in the past? Is that going to be the same kind of qualifications?
Yeah, some banks say no. That's just their rules. So, you know, the guidelines for the, so SBA comes out with an SOP, and we just had recent changes. Like we've had in May and August, there's been tons of changes. So I also take classes through NAGL, which is the National Association of Government Guaranteed Lenders. There's no other brokers, not many, I should say, that take these classes, but I'm like, man, I want to learn this business because it's complicated. But there's like a stack of this, the SOP is just crazy. And like they update stuff, and but for business bankruptcy, it's probably a 7-year look back. I would say that they wouldn't want to see it. I'd have to check the guidelines to see what the actual, you know, circumstances around that. I mean, SBA lending is make sense lending. Now I want to add something here too. If there's a collateral shortfall, so here's a caveat with SBA that I always want people to be aware of. You know. I'm going to use myself. I own a couple of houses, primary rental properties. I'm 100% owner of these houses, or my business entities are 100% owner of these houses. I'm going out and I buy this $1 million, or let's just say it's $800,000. There's no real estate. It's just the machines and the business that I'm buying. And that they're only going to give you. So basically, I'm getting a loan for $1 million, and the value of the collateral is maybe $50,000, because they're going to use 30% of the value of the machines. So there's a collateral shortfall. SBA guidelines say if there's a collateral shortfall, they're going to look for additional collateral. So if you have additional collateral, they're going to put a second lien on it until they make up for that collateral shortfall. If you don't have any real estate, they can still do the loan. So I'm just letting you know that if you own real estate, just be aware. So what does that mean? Before you ever apply for a loan, maybe you pull out a big equity line. You can just, I'm not telling you that, but I'm telling you that. Just be aware that now some banks, and here's the other thing, some banks only want to do SBA deals with CRE, with commercial real estate, because it's collateralized. Some banks will do when there's we call it a big air ball. It's all blue sky. It's intangible. You're just buying the business, the value of the business, right? There's no collateral, essentially. Because even if you think, oh, well, it's got $200,000 in machines, well, really, they're going to use fire sale value, and that's like $50,000. So just realize you're going to have a collateral shortfall, and they will look for additional collateral. And if you don't have additional collateral, doesn't mean you're not going to get approved. We just got to find the right bank that doesn't mind, because they're saying, who cares? Because this thing's spitting off $200,000 a year in net cash flow. So
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's an awesome tip, because, you know, a lot of people who are trying to get into the business or whatever are going to have other assets, you know, whether it's real estate or other businesses or whatever. And so having that equity in there is obviously, that's a good thing to have equity in your assets, except for if they're going to try to tie them all together. So that's an awesome tip. Are there things, I mean, you've kind of already mentioned all the things. I just want to make sure we kind of cover all the bases. Are there things, let's say I want to do an SBA loan. I'm getting excited about the things you're saying, 'cause I am getting excited about the things you're saying. Let's say I want to do an SBA loan, aside from sort of getting my credit, you know, kind of in line, maybe pulling out some lines of credit on other assets, stuff like that. Anything else we should be doing to make sure that we're going to qualify for an SBA loan?
Not really. I mean, it's just really getting a lot of people come to me with like the P&Ls and like, here's the P&Ls from the business I'm buying. I'm like, just get the tax returns, because like the P&Ls sometimes don't represent the actuals. And SBA guidelines are going to require 3 years of tax returns if it's an existing business. I don't know if any of your viewers ever do startups, but we can do startup financing too. We can finance up to, well, the SBA guidelines say you can do 100% financing, but really, we can typically, prudent lending is going to allow for 90% on the high leverage of total project cost for a startup. So that's pretty good. Some banks may say, hey, we're only comfortable doing 80 or 85, but some banks will do 90 of total project cost on startups. So if you're starting from the ground up, there's nothing you really have to prepare for. I would say, like, you know, what I do oftentimes is people schedule a call and I'll send them the initial documents. I'll send them the form 413. So I say, you just get it ready and fill it out and don't date it and sign it. So when you're ready, you're not like, oh, I got to do a debt schedule. I got to do a form 413. I got to do a resume. I got to do a, you know, and then from a business plan's perspective, yeah, maybe we get them some templates that they can say, hey, here's an example. But really, the business plan doesn't need to be elaborate. It just needs, if it's like some random business, like I'm starting at some venue and it's going to have, you know, a vineyard and I'm going to do, you know, weddings, and that's requires a more in-depth business plan. But laundromats, it's really, you know, who's in the market, who's my competition, who's close, how many machines, is this wash, am I just doing laundry, am I doing wash and fold, am I going to do delivery, how can I value add, is it coin operated, is it actually, you know, digitized now? That's really what they want. So it's not that complicated. I wouldn't get overwhelmed with that part. It's really, if you're buying an existing business and you have and especially if you get a home run business where it's just like strong cash flow, those are the easiest deals, because it's like the seller is just getting old and they're like, we want to sell, but they're very meticulous with their books and their strong cash flow, and they're going to sell, they're going to carry back a little bit. That makes the deal so sweet. So always look for seller financing, And oftentimes say like, look, you're going to get killed on taxes. Why don't we do some sort of installment? At least keep, you know, I'll get 80% financing from the bank. You finance, you know, 15%. I'll come in with 5%. And then you give them a little bit of a tax break. So now, Jordan, there's another really cool thing. Before, if you were using SBA financing, so let's just say Jordan had a good starter laundromat that he's done with. He's like, all right, I'm moving on to bigger pastures. It's only got 30 machines. I only do 100 machines or more, whatever. I could say, hey, Jordan, I want to buy into your business. So before, Jordan would have to sell 100%, but now Jordan could stay in. So now you can do partial buyouts now. You couldn't do that before. That's a new guideline change.
That's an awesome kind of tool to have in the tool belt too, you know, right now, like finding laundromat deals is tough right now. There's just not as much on the market as we're used to seeing. And so we're having to be a little more creative with a lot of deals. But that's a really good tool to have in the tool belt, you know, especially if there's an owner who's, you know, interested in selling, but also, you know, kind of feeling like maybe I don't want to sell, I don't know. And there's, you know, having that tool and say, okay, well, let's look to see if this makes sense for you and for me, is awesome. I didn't even know that.
Yeah. And it also could be strategic. They could get a little bit of windfall off capital now. They could stay in as 50 or 60% owner or 40% owner. They still got to, I thought when the rule came out that they could take like a 19% ownership and then not have to be a guarantor, but it's not the case. SBA will look back 6 months. So you can't do it that way, but you could strategically like sell a portion, bring in a new buyer operator, stay in the deal, only get taxed a little bit and then still get cash flow and have them kind of run the day to day. So I think you're going to see more creativity that way coming through over the next couple of years.
Yeah. I love that. Any other changes that you're seeing in SBA loan
options? No, SBA is pushing to do more smaller loans. So anything sub 500, they're pushing the banks to do. They want, really, it's, you know, these programs are for Americans to, you know, become self-employed and to grow the world and the economy and to create a better life for everybody. So like, if you're able to take advantage of this type of loan, now not everybody can. Like my financials are, I run a lot of losses. I have a lot of entities. It's very difficult for me to get SBA financing. So, you know, some people that have lots of losses on paper and it's going to be hard to add back depreciation other than the depreciation. And that's going to be a little bit harder sell than somebody that's, you know, maybe just getting started. It's almost easier because you just, hey, I'm W-2 to make 120 grand a year as a software sales guy and I own a house, and like that's super easy, right? There's not a lot of moving parts versus like I have one guy right now and he's got like 23 affiliates. Now they just changed the rule, but in the past I would have to provide 23 tax returns for each of the year because he owns 100% of those businesses. So, you know, just amount of paperwork. You know, if you're not that complicated, it almost makes it easier. But at the end of the day, it's a great process. If you're not, here's another tip I was thinking about earlier that I didn't say. So oftentimes, let's just say you're buying a mom and pop and it's completely run to crap. The seller's willing to carry back 50%. You can go get a short-term loan, like a hard money loan, you know, with a 2-year note. As long as it's got a balloon payment, you could refinance with SBA too. So that's another way to come in and with a value add play. So you take it over, you now have a balloon, but now you get the books running right, you got everything clean, then you refinance with the 7A. So there you can do that too.
If you're planning to refinance, is 2 years a good time period? Do you need a little more? What should I be shooting for?
No, I mean, we could do it. We could do it in 12 months, I think. I think it just, you know, like if the deal makes sense, you can get it done. As long as the debt is eligible to be refinanced, meaning like if you have a balloon on a loan, then it's eligible because there's, before the SBA guideline said like, you know, if you had like $2 million in the bank and you're borrowing $500,000, they would say, no, like you could go get a conventional loan. So they got rid of that rule to a certain degree. Because they didn't want to, they wanted to make loans to people that couldn't normally get it. Like, I can't go out and get 90% financing from a bank on a business with no collateral. Like, but SBA does. Like, a normal bank would probably be at like 50% LTV, loan to cost, right? They're not stupid. Now, the reason the banks are willing to make the risk is because they're getting a guarantee from the government. So they're getting a guarantee from anywhere from like, say, 60 to 85%, depending on the type of loan and the size of the loan. So that's why these banks are like, okay, well, if we underwrite the deal correctly and use prudent lending, we got a guarantee of this loan. And on the 7A loans, they sell off the guaranteed piece, most of the banks. So they make a ton of money. So that's why these banks love doing 7As versus not as many of them like to do the 504s because they make more money on the 7As. But if you learn the game of money, then, you know, like if you really think about it, you could go out and buy a $1 million business with 50 grand. Like that's spinning off $200,000 or $300,000 a year in cash flow. You just quit your, you know, replace your income. I was talking to a guy yesterday and he was like, yeah, I've been buying real estate. And then I was started listening to Cody Sanchez and this guy was a Navy SEAL and he went to SEAL school with, I guess, Cody Sanchez's husband. He was a SEAL. And so he was like, yeah, it just makes sense. And he's like, I got about 300 grand. How much can I qualify for? I'm like, well, it's not really like that. But in theory, yeah, you can go out and buy a $3 million business, right? You got 10% down. You need 6 to 8 months of post-close liquidity of reserves typically. Well, he could go buy a $3 million business, right? Maybe he gets a salary carry back 5%. He comes in with 150 grand. He has 150 grand left in dry powder. He now takes over. Now there's already a manager in place, but these SBA loans have to be for owner user businesses. It can't be like people are getting calls. Can I go buy multifamily? No. Can I buy self storage? Yes, because that's considered a business. In 2010, they said that they made the rule that, yeah, well, you can do self storage. That's when they did. So now self storage is a huge industry. Car washes, things like that. SBA eligible. Grocery stores. Startup businesses, wholesale businesses. We even have cap lines. So they have a program for home builders. They can get lines of credit from SBA to build houses. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is awesome. And I mean, the SBA option just opens up so many doors for the right person who's trying to get into the right business, right? And obviously we're talking laundromats here, but a lot of laundromat owners, you know, another thing that they find is that they buy these laundromats and they have excess cash, right? Because they're either still working their 9 to 5 and they're just kind of stockpiling their laundromat cash flow, or their cash flow just exceeds what they need. And so, you know, building up, you know, some of that extra kind of capital and being able to redeploy it, you know, either through purchasing more laundromats or building another business. I mean, we just see that happen so much. So yes, for getting into the laundromat industry in buying laundromats, but also, you know, you kind of get that entrepreneur bug sometimes, right? And you have a business, it's working, you're kind of understanding it, and you're itching to try something else. We, you know, entrepreneurs are pretty notorious for that shiny object syndrome. So
yeah, or you see like large operators that run short-term rentals, and then I just was listening to somebody and he's like, yeah, we were doing so much laundry that we bought a laundromat, right? So you just start thinking like, what can you vertically integrate in your operations that make the most sense? And the nice thing about laundromats too is that every time you buy the equipment, they fall under Section 179. So you could be very strategic for taxes too. So I like businesses like that. Like, okay, I'm going to replace this much equipment this year. It's going to give you that write off. And if you can scale too, you can just have you can almost, you know, offset all your income by buying more equipment and expanding. Right. And so like it's a never ending battle.
Yeah. That's pretty much what I've done is I've tried to make at least one major purchase a year, and it essentially through the depreciation and all the other kind of tax benefits, it's offsetting the majority of my income pretty much every year. There.
Do you own any of the real estate with the laundromats or mostly just the laundromats?
Yeah, I do own some real estate with the laundromats also.
Yeah. Cause then you have the cost segregation on top that you could do. Right, like.
What can you talk about that?
It just opens up.
What is cost? I mean, that's huge in our circle, right? Like in GoBundance, we're talking about cost segregation nonstop. I'm almost sick of hearing about it, but it's so powerful, right? Can you explain a little bit what that is?
Yeah, there's certain components of your real estate that you can So on a you know, if you buy a multifamily building, you can typically you depreciate over 27 and a half years. If it's a commercial building, I think it's 29 and a half years. But anyways, there's certain components that if you do a cost segregation study, we have a tax code that allows you to do acceleration of that depreciation, and we have a bonus depreciation. And so basically, you can depreciate certain components, and you can like go to a cost segregation company, and you can give them, hey, I bought this property, and this is what I, you know, this is the information. They go, oh yeah, this is how much your write off's going to be. So like, for example, I had a guy, and he bought a building. We did SBA 504 financing for. He's opening. He opened a car dealership where he sells just only electric vehicles resale. And he's like, hey, I'm looking for more cash flow. And I go, hey, dude, you know, here, go fill this form out. And he essentially had $300,000 roughly of depreciation. And he hasn't yet paid his 2022 taxes. I go, do you have a tax consequence? He's like, yeah, probably. So he basically has 300, like if he owed 200 grand, he could just not pay that because he's accelerating depreciation of that property. So like that's a huge, you do have to recapture it down the road, but it doesn't matter because you end up 1031 exchanging it or doing something. So you just kick it down the tire until you're dead, and then it doesn't matter when you're dead. So when you're looking at strategies, it's not how much money you make, but it's how much money you keep, right? Like I talk about my rich brother. And my rich brother is really smart, right? And he's got a lot of money, but he could have 10 times more money. He's W-2'd, you know, pays probably $300,000 a year in taxes, right? Like, and I look at my other, he works W-2 in the financial service world, and he's super smart, yada, yada, yada. But like, he does not understand any of these strategies. Like what he could be doing is he could be buying laundromat. He could be buying short-term rentals, right? Because if you materially participate in running a short-term rental, you may be able to do cost segregation on that, right? I'm not a tax accountant or a CPA, but I'm just telling you, like, there's ways that you can play within the tax code that encourage us to be entrepreneurs. So everybody gets mad when they go, well, how does this guy not pay taxes? He makes millions. Because they play in the tax code. And you can too. Us up-and-coming entrepreneurs of the world, you can be doing the same thing. You're making 200 grand a year on your W-2, you're doing well. Time you pay taxes, though, you're getting crushed. Well, that 50 grand that you paid in this year, what if you went and bought a building with a laundromat and you did cost segregation, or you bought a short-term rental property? Like, you can be applying all these tips and tricks and pay less in taxes. And then, you know, I always look at that, like, whenever I'm having a taxable consequence and I know it, I'm like planning ahead. I'm like, okay, well, what can I invest in that will offset some of this? That could be education. I'm investing, you know, in the best business in the world, my education, right? It could be like, you know, we're in masterminds. We pay a couple thousand dollars or more than a couple thousand dollars a year, right? These are write-offs. But, well, you know, is there anything I could buy? Maybe it's, here's another thing. Well, what if you own a laundromat and you wanted to buy, you put a vending machine in there, and that vending machine now does, you know, $1,000 a month in revenue. Like, and then you also can use Section 179 because you just spent 10 grand on that vending machine. And then, like, there's all these things that you can build on that I think we often overlook. And then also, you can also, you know, if you have employees, there's WOTC tax credits. There's all these things that people don't know. So if you have employees, you can get up to between $2,000 and $9,000 per employee with the WOTC tax credit. People don't know this. So cost segregation's huge. Section 179 is huge. And like, listen, I don't know that much about taxes, but when I hear these things and I listen to podcasts and I pick up on these and I go, I remember my friend a couple years ago says, oh, I made $4.4 million this year. He goes, I didn't pay any taxes. So I had $5.4 million. He buys multifamily properties, right? He paid no tax. And he just grows his wealth exponentially. It's crazy.
Well, and I mean, listen, I talk to a lot of people. You're like, it's hard to get excited about taxes, but like, that's exciting, right? Because you can go out and buy, you know, an asset and get excited about an 8%, 10%, even like laundromat 20, 25% return on your money. But when you play the tax code right, you're making 30, 40, 50% return on that effort that you're doing there when you're saving money on the tax. So, I mean, it pays off huge to, like you put it, like play in the tax code, right? And look for these tax savings because the returns on that are gigantic, right? Not just in the money yeah. that you keep in your pocket, but all of that compounds, you know, over time. Because if your buddy's, you know, making $5 million in a year and he ends up not paying taxes, he's keeping the majority of that money and able to reinvest it. How much faster is that going to grow than if he had to pay half of it in taxes and he's got $2.5 million, right? Like, still nothing to complain about, but good grief, man. You're talking significant growth, significantly faster.
Yeah. It's weird that I didn't go to college, but I started studying all this stuff and it's just like, this stuff excited me because I'm like, who would think that taxes are exciting? Because they are pretty boring. But when you learn about like what you can do and like how the really wealthy people navigate, that's where it just, you know, you can get ahead. And like how you can navigate getting almost 100% financing. All these things are the things that you do in your life that will change your life. And that's the most important. Like that, you know, we talk about like buying houses, even like owning an owner-occupied house. You get $250,000 or $500,000 tax exemption. You can move every 2 years and take that exemption. You know, you could 1031 exchange. A lot of people don't know this. You can 1031 exchange. Let's just say I have a property in Indiana. I exchange it for a property here in Las Vegas. I keep it as a rental for a certain amount of years. I then move into it. I then can qualify for the exemptions, right? So you can squash almost about everything if you play the game. And that's what I really love. I'm like, okay, like I don't even need to make that much money to become, because you could have somebody that's making 500 grand a year, that's W-2'd, has no write-offs, and has a very, you know, they rent an apartment, $6,000 a month, they drive an escalator, whatever, $2,000 a month, right? And then at the end of the day, you know, you're thinking, how do you have no money at $500,000 a year? But there's a lot of people that live that way versus that one person that made 100 grand a year, but made these strategic investments into like laundromats and like, you know, you just make that first investment and then you just keep going and going and going. Then you have, like you were saying, you get more cash flow and then you're like, okay, well, I'm now 100%er. I have more cash. I have passive cash flow coming in. You can reinvest that into other assets. So I think that's the mindset we all need to really kind of grow slowly but surely. You're just one laundromat away.
I love that. You're just one laundromat away. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, here's the thing. Like, I don't want us to get caught up on, okay, well, he's talking about his buddy who made $4 or $5 million or who's got a W-2 that's making $200,000 to $400,000 a year, whatever. These things play kind of no matter where you're at if you play them right. Like, you don't even have to make $100,000 a year to take advantage of a lot of this stuff, right? And so, you know, it's worth your time to be, you know, number one, kind of doing your own homework on, you know, how wealthy people utilize the tax code, because you can utilize many of the same things. If you're making $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year, you can utilize this stuff still to help offset, you know, tax burden. So that's number one. And then number two, when you get to that point where you're starting to accumulate some assets, it's just worth it to hire somebody who knows, who likes playing in the tax code. Like, you know, it's not going to be me who is going to be reading through all the tax documents and figuring out, you know, all the little ways to maximize your tax savings and all that. But there are people who love doing that, right? And finding the best people you can to help you play in the tax code there, obviously legally and all that stuff. You know, it just pays off and it compounds kind of exponentially. So like you said, you don't have to be making crazy amounts of money to take advantage of this stuff. You know, this can work for you. And especially if you already own laundromats, there are a lot of things that we can do as laundromat owners to minimize our tax burden. So definitely worth it. I don't know how we started talking about taxes from SBA loans, but we're just hitting all the exciting topics today. Lending, taxes, all of it. What else should we talk about boring wise? Make it exciting.
Yeah, no, I just get interested in all of this because this is all about like entrepreneurship. Like a lot of people think like, oh, I got to make how much money you make, but it's really the full picture. It's really about planning because it's making like those strategic moves. When I look at the first house I bought in San Ramon, California, I bought it on a lease option because I couldn't get a loan at the time. I set the price, and then a year later, I exercised the option to buy it. And I look at, like, I just, that property I bought at 325 is now worth $1.3 million. I don't own it anymore, but I always go back and say, why did I ever sell that property? I never needed to. It could have been a rental cash flow, right? And so, like, you just to getting in the game is so important. Like the mindset, like people probably watch your show or listen to your podcast, like every episode, but like the people that will actually take action to actually, go out there and find these deals, right? Cause sure, you can pull a list online of laundromats, but probably the best way to do it is to find these kind of mom and pop off market deals and buy them, I guess, is my guess. Cause I mean, I know there's a lot of brokers that specialize in it, but would you say that, cause you're a commercial broker, right, too?
Yeah. No, but I mean, I definitely think the biggest opportunities are either coming from pocket listings, which there's not as many of as there used to be. And pocket listings is just where a broker has a deal that they know is available, but it's not listed anywhere yet. Or more commonly now is through going out and finding your own deal through, something like direct mail marketing or like a door knocking where you're going to meet owners and ask them about their laundromat, ask them if they're interested in selling. Those off-market deals are for sure the way to find the best deals, out there. And a lot of times the best terms too. If you're talking about like seller financing or, things like that. Sometimes, the brokers have deals that sellers will offer the seller financing option, but a lot of times you got to go find those deals yourself.
And what about starting from the scratch? I mean, obviously that's a way slower process to get to recoup your cash flow, but have you ever thought about doing, starting from scratch?
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think a lot of people still build. There's a lot to consider. Obviously, like you said, it's a slower play to get to that break even point and then to start cash flowing. Obviously the build out takes time. Takes a lot of capital to get going. A lot of times you can buy cheaper than you can build, but that's not always the case. And that's not always the best option. But if you find a great location, where the demographics are right, the competition is right. And you've got the space, then it can be a great option to build out for sure. And I'm assuming you can SBA finance build outs. Is that true?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, for sure.
Is there any successful franchise concepts in the space that you've ever seen?
There have been many attempts. There are a couple franchises right now that are gaining some ground. So we'll see how they play out. I think it's too soon to tell. I would say that every attempt, thus far has not been successful in the industry. But there are a couple of interesting franchises right now in the laundromat space. So we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. Some are trying to make some big moves. So I know one just came on the podcast a few episodes ago, Laundrolab, and they had just made a big acquisition of a pickup and delivery company called The Fold. And, they're trying to make some big moves, and their goal is to, be the nationwide brand, especially for pickup and delivery, but utilizing their franchise self-serve stores as the base points for their pickup and delivery. So there's some interesting things happening right now. So we'll see how it all plays out.
Is wash and fold service, is that something you have in every laundromat of yours typically?
No, I mean, I'd say probably the majority or at least probably half, I don't know the exact number, but of laundromats don't have that. They're self-serve only. Either fully attended or unattended, but no service side to the business. Cause that's what adding a drop-off laundry or pickup and delivery does. It introduces the service side of the industry. Otherwise it's self-service. And so it does change up the business model a little bit.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how technology plays a part of this. Cause there's going to be some disruption to a certain degree. I mean, one thing is we know people, this is almost like water. People need to wash their clothes at some point, right? And so there's so many people that apartment lifetime renters that don't have laundry facilities. So then it's like, okay, well, they could still do laundry maybe in their apartment complex, but people hate doing laundry. So you're going to like I remember when I lived in an apartment after I sold a house, I was between places. I didn't have laundry and I hated going and doing laundry. I just, you know, I liked it. It was just, didn't have the time. So would I pay? And so what I do is I drop off and did the wash and fold.
Yeah. Yeah. And
so it's interesting.
Yeah, that side of the business is definitely growing, especially the pickup and delivery, but also the drop off laundry. Both, I think, are growing. And I'm seeing a trend towards new laundromats coming in that are larger and that are more full service laundry centers, right? Where you can come do your own laundry, or we'll do it for you, or we'll come pick it up and then do it for you. I definitely see a trend moving that way for sure. And technology is playing a huge role, which it hadn't played a huge role for a very long time. We were pretty stagnant technologically speaking. And now we're finally starting to make some strides to, I think, catch up to modern day technology. We're not really on the forefront of anything yet, but we're catching up. It's exciting to see.
Yeah, very interesting stuff. I am definitely interested in owning a laundromat, but I have a lot to learn. So I have to watch your podcast, go through your training courses, because like anything, there's a learning curve.
Yeah. And it pays to shorten that learning curve, right? Whether that's taking a course or, you know, getting a mentor or whatever it is, like shorten that learning curve as much as you can. You know, cause time is money, man. Time is money. So, Bo, this has been awesome. So much like good, solid information. Like I said, this is one of the most talked about subjects, especially when I'm doing the webinars on how to buy a laundromat. SBA loans come up every single time I do a webinar. And so this information is just gold. So if people have more questions about SBA lending, maybe they need to talk to you a little bit more about their particular situation or interested in getting an SBA loan, what's the best way they can get in contact with you?
They can go to bookwithbo.com, book, and you can get it on my calendar. It goes to my Calendly link, bookwithbo.com. And then make sure you mention that you heard me on Jordan's podcast too, please. I always want to know where you found me.
Make me look good, people. Make me look good.
Yeah, that's right.
So, yeah, no, this has been awesome. I'm sure there'll be people reaching out to you for sure because, like I said, this is super common question. And it's something that, you know, it solves one of the biggest problems potentially in getting into this business, which is high capital needs up front, right? And if you can get in, you know, 80, 90, 95% leverage, I mean, I think it just makes it more accessible to more people sooner than they, you know, normally anticipate if they're trying to come up with 40 or, you know, or more percent down. You know, for some of these businesses.
And you know what's crazy too, if you really think about it, you literally could go and with one acquisition, you could replace your job, your W-2 job. Like you could easily do that because I see how much cash flow the right laundromats do. Like one acquisition, 50 grand out of pocket because you're buying $1 million business, let's go say, right? And you're getting the seller to care a little bit, 50 grand. And that can come from, it could be a gift from your family member. Like, if you really break it down that way, really, you need to learn the fundamentals of how to buy these and run these businesses, right? You need to learn this. You take the course, get a mentor, and then you spend the next 6 months looking at deals every single day, you know, and then you line up the SBA finance to understand the process. It's like 50 grand. You just replaced your W-2 job. But I wouldn't say quit right away. Keep the W-2 job. Stack another 100 grand of capital and buy one more. And now you run two pretty close to each other. So, and you just, now you have enough cash flow to reinvest and buy real estate and just
turbocharge,
create passive income.
Yeah. Turbocharge. Yeah. I love that. 50 grand to buy your freedom. That is going to be the name of this episode for sure. Because I love that. And, you know, and that's why I talk to people. So I would consider myself first a real estate investor and then second laundromats, actually. However, you know, what I tell people is like, look, if you're trying to exit your W-2, if you are trying to buy your achieve financial freedom, you know, there's really not too many better ways than buying something like a laundromat to do that. And, you know, I learned about the concept through real estate investing until I started to like sit down and think, and I'm like, man, I have to have how many doors to replace my income to buy my freedom? Like, that's a lot of real estate. Whereas, like you said, one, maybe two laundromats and you are, you know, free to do what you want with your time. So I love that. And you are the guy to help us get there. So I appreciate you coming on, sharing your knowledge, your wisdom, dropping those bombs, making yourself available. Bookwithbo.com. That link will be in the show notes. Or if you're on YouTube, those will be down below. So on your way down to click that link, hit the subscribe button, and then go click that link and book with Bo, and then make me look good and let him know you heard about him from me. Bo, you are the man. Appreciate you coming on. Thanks so much. And hopefully you'll be chatting with a whole bunch of future laundromat empire builders.
All right. Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Likewise. All right. I hope you loved that episode with Bo. Man, in today's market where financing is just so difficult right now, interest rates are high, down payment requirements are high, laundromat prices are high, equipment prices are high, everything is high right now, utility costs, they're high, everything is high, right? Hopefully this SBA option is going to help some of you get into this business or expand your empire here and help you grow that out, right? And so SBA can be a great option for so many reasons for so many people. So hopefully you got something good out of that. And again, if you're interested in a live Q&A with Bo, I will set that up. Just drop me a line, jordan@laundromatresource.com. And make sure you're checking out laundromatresource.com/events frequently, because we got stuff going on all the time. All right, we'll see you next week. Peace.